This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
First half, absolutely amazing, fantastic. Everything was in there, you know, collective skill, individual skill, finishing, all what you dream to see on the, in the stand when you come and watch football.
That was Arsene Wenger purring about Ozil's midweek performance. More from Arsene coming up, as well as Champions League, Europa League and the weekend preview.
Thank Friday, it's football on BFM 89.9.
Happy Friday, everybody. And I heard Jem's really bad today.
It's terrible.
Terrible. Yeah. Let me introduce to you the guest for tonight, Bob Holmes.
Hi, everybody. Good evening.
Ray Jennings.
Evening, all.
And Robin Paraba.
Hey, Jeff. Great to be here.
Now, I've got to do this because I forgot to do this last week. And I only did it in like towards the mid part of the show. Yeah, you can get in touch with us via Twitter. It's at BFM Radio. Or you could SMS us at 0162019000. You could email us. It's football@bfm.my. But I tell you what, Ross would actually really like a Facebook like. It's facebook.com/football on BFM. So where do we begin? Arsenal 2 and Napoli 0. Mesut assist tech maestro Ozil, he scored his first goal for Gunners, and also he set up for Olivier Giroud. That was a very good game. It was practically done within 15 minutes.
It's a miracle what ten wins technically can do for you. I mean, it was just 10 wins ago that Arsene Wenger was saying, you want me to sign someone? Who? Tell me who. And you've got him purring on the side's performance. It's a big difference Mesut Ozil brings to the squad. He was, again, extreme quality in the first half. The finish was an accomplished finish of a player at the top of his game. You know, past what is a relatively good goalkeeper in Pepe Reina, Ramsey again provided the assist there and was the outstanding performer aside from Ozil and Giroud.
He was passing it to the back of the net.
Yeah, he was. And Giroud just thrives on Ozil's service. You know, I think Ray could have scored that one.
No.
Too far out for Ray.
I thought that finish was superb.
It
looked easy, but it wasn't. Yeah. To have that control. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Arsenal first half, superb. It's interesting because you look at the way they've started this season, comparatively last season, season before, and the last 8 years, it's completely different Arsenal. And when we talk about one player changing things, I don't think it's just on the pitch. It's the atmosphere around the Emirates. It's the play and the interplay amongst his teammates. I think Flamini is looking like a different player. I think Ramsey, you know, listening to Wenger this week, he was talking about it took him a good 18 to 24 months to get over the mental side of that injury from Shawcross at Stoke, and i.e. going into tackles and being able to really display his talent. He's got the whole bag at the moment. There's a part of me that would like to see Arsenal fail, but there's another big part that thinks about time.
Yeah, it's an incredible transformation, one which you struggle actually to think of a comparison for. Mm. But I think we should give credit to those Arsenal fans who at the Aston Villa game, when they lost dramatically, were waving £5 and £10 notes around, and one held up a bed sheet saying spend.
But those £5, £10 notes, that was about £3,000 in total, and that went towards Ozil.
Yeah, 42 million.
Yeah. So just another 42,900,000.
But it does show what a swoop like that, a dramatic swoop for a world-class player can do. Mm. Because the mood was transformed even before he kicked a ball.
Yeah. Yeah. The one caveat you'd have, and we say this every week, because Arsenal are a stunning team to watch, but they released something like 6 or 7 first team squad members, and they brought in Ozil, they brought in Flamini and Sonogo. That's three, one of which has never played in the Premiership. So the concern you have is if Giroud gets injured, if Lauren Koscielny, who's their only functioning centre-half, gets injured, that they're going to struggle. Yeah. So I think Arsenal are a very good team. I think they're top of the league for a reason, and they're breezing through the Champions League in a very difficult group at the moment. But they've got to strengthen in terms of squad numbers in January if they want a sustained challenge towards getting Champions League glory or a Premier League title and so on in the coming season.
Yeah. Good point. Another point I'd like to make is Jack Wilshere can't even get in the team now. And we talked earlier about English players not getting a look in. Well, Jack Wilshere is everybody's future England captain. He's the best young English player, and yet even he can't get into the side. So what hope is there?
Well, there are rumours saying that apparently Mesut Ozil even assisted the nurse during his birth. In the other game, Borussia Dortmund, they beat Marseille 3-0. Lewandowski scored two goals. Napoli on 3 points. Arsenal are on top in Group F. In Group E, Ramirez scored twice as Chelsea recorded their first 3 points of the season's Champions League group stage with a win over Steaua Bucharest. Well, Jose Mourinho must be very happy with the performances of Andreas Schürrle and also Juan Mata.
Yeah, I think he made a throwaway comment that Mata played well off the ball, which I think was a little bit crass, as in, we all know Mata's quality. And whatever the point Mourinho was trying to make, credit to Mata, he's stuck to his guns and trained well, and he's got his reward. I think, if anything, it's made Mourinho look a little bit embarrassing, the way he's reacted towards Mata. I think it was completely unjustified. I know there's the argument that Mata doesn't track back, that he's too much more of an attacking player, but I think ultimately, without Mata, they don't look like the same team.
Well, there was a fiasco, the press conference before the game, when Mourinho kind of stormed out.
I think when you look at that, you know that Mourinho's got a track record of, when things are going against his team, to invite pressure onto himself and sort of turn the attention away from the team that's underperforming. Having said that, I think there was genuine, you know, irritation there. The previous 3 weeks had all been questions about Mata, and as soon as he says he's going to play, then they go, "Where's Kevin De Bruyne?" Now, again, just elongating on what Ray said, Mourinho does look a little bit childish with some of the things he does, because he's losing his temper a lot. Bear in mind, this is the guy that 2 months ago was the happy one, right? Couldn't, you know, the English press was so in love with him, we're so happy Jose's back, and their relationship ended faster than a Kardashian one, okay? So you can see that Mourinho now is getting irritated with interviewers. He actually wants the respect that is usually accorded to Ferguson, to him, and he feels he's not getting it. Having said that, his treatment of De Bruyne may have played badly against Swindon, may not have tracked back, and may not have done the things Mourinho wanted him to do, but that's one game. To make him train with the reserves as a result just appears petulant to me.
Yeah, and then there's the question of Lukaku. I mean, if ever anyone could see what Chelsea need, it's Lukaku, isn't it? And yet he's out there, not just for the first loan period, but for the entire season.
It's ridiculous.
And he had the option of just reducing it to
6 months.
6 months, yeah. Could call him back in January. But he even refused that. And to do that smacks of absolute arrogance.
It was almost like he was making a point. He missed a penalty, didn't he?
Lukaku, the Super Cup.
In the previous season.
And it's almost like he's trying to make a point. Lukaku has basically picked up where he left off with West Brom last season, now with Everton. He's a quality striker.
With the caveat, I think his hands were a bit tied on the Lukaku issue, because I think he was very convinced that he was moving on Demba Ba. And at the last minute, he nixed that deal after Arsenal bought Ozil, because he felt he couldn't let them strengthen by getting a striker. And the only available option then was to loan out Lukaku, because nobody could afford Torres on his wages. But having said that, after that, to say we're not going to call him back in January, Mourinho's the kind of guy that when he makes a decision, he says, it's my decision. And he'll cut off his nose to spite his face just to say it was the correct decision.
In the other Group E game, Schalke beat Basel 1-0 in Switzerland. And Schalke are on top of the group, with Chelsea and Basel level with 3 points. Steaua Bucharesti, no hope, no chance at all of qualifying, I guess?
No, they're going to finish bottom with probably a point, maximum three, I would assume a point. Sorry, we just glossed over a little bit there. Just about Borussia Dortmund, I know I say this every week, but they are such an awesome team. That attacking triumvirate is the best three attacking players in tandem all over Europe. Lewandowski, Marco Reus, and Hendrik Mkhitaryan are awesome together.
We're going to take a short break. But first, we're going to listen to Arsene Wenger speaking about his happy win.
Very good. You cannot start better. Of course, the next two will be deciders. And that's why we want again to come back after the international break and have a great game like that tonight against Dortmund.
Hi, I'm Gary Neville. Thank Friday, it's football.
And we're back with Bob Holmes, Ray Jennings and Prabin Paraba. Remember, you could tweet us at BFM Radio. You could SMS 016-201-9000. In Group A of Champions League, Shakhtar Donetsk 1 and Manchester United 1. Brazilian striker Tyson denied Manchester United their second Champions League win with a second-half equaliser. United took the lead through Danny Welbeck from Marouane Fellaini's assist. Good game. Good result.
I think good result more than a good game. I think any English team that goes to Shakhtar and gets a result is quite commendable because they have a fantastic record against English clubs. It was interesting how one of the reasons behind United's demise is supposedly that Ferdinand's played too often and Vidic hasn't. And ironically, Vidic was to blame for the equaliser. But I think after the turmoil of the last few weeks for United, this is actually a very solid result.
Well, they've got problems in the attack as well. Apparently, United have only managed one shot on target in the Champions League game for the third time since 2006.
Yeah, I don't think it's just in Europe. I think it's across the board.
Even in the five-a-sides at Carrington.
Yeah. You see the value of Rooney when he doesn't play. Mm. Hopefully he's not seriously injured. He should be back at the weekend.
Should be back.
Did anyone notice Van Persie's hair is starting to go grey?
It's been like that for a while.
Is that he's wondering when he's going to get his next pass?
the one interesting thing that tactically that came out of that game was pushing Marouane Fellaini further forward. I've said on the show before, I don't think he's a defensive midfielder. Mm-hmm. He may think he's the next Roy Keane, but probably it's only him and David Moyes. So he pushed him further forward. He held the ball up. He set up the first goal. Contributed a lot more than he actually has in his Premier League appearances so far. So that might be a way forward for United. The one caveat I'd put on Ray saying it's a good result, because it is a good result to get a point in Ukraine at the Donbas Arena, but let's bear in mind this is not the same Shakhtar team as last season. This team has lost Willian, they've lost Fernandinho, they've lost Mkhitaryan, they've lost the spine of the team, and yet they gave United a bit of a game. But I think, as Ray said, it's a result that they were building towards, and if they can follow that up with a win away to Sunderland on the weekend, then maybe crisis is a large word to use at the moment.
Well, the result means United are on 4 points, still leading Group A on goal difference ahead of Shakhtar. Bayer Leverkusen are a point behind following their 2-1 win over Real Sociedad. The other Manchester club, this was a very good game. Manchester City 1, Bayern Munich 3. Again, Joe Hart's poor performance. He was in question last week. And this week he proved that, his form has been dropping.
It's not a blip, is it? It's almost a blip a game. Mm. This has been going on now for two seasons. And it's very rare to see this, actually. I mean, we got used to the David James's brilliant 1 minute and then clownish the next and that kind of thing, which he did on a pretty consistent level. Mm. But Joe Hart actually was a top keeper, probably one of the top three or four in the world at his peak 2 years ago. And to see him now consistently bad is quite shocking. And I can't think of any other player that has experienced such a decline.
I remember
in form.
Fernando Torres.
Fernando Torres, yeah, goalkeeper.
Goalkeeper-wise.
Yeah. Fernando Torres is off a cliff, isn't it?
I remember three, four seasons ago when he was on loan to Birmingham, and I picked up on the number of unforced errors he was making. And then he came out of that, and the Joe Hart we know now. I think, though, more importantly with this game, it was, yes, two calamitous errors, was how amazing Bayern Munich were. Yeah. Mm. And if it hadn't been for that, I think Arsenal would have been taking all the headlines the following morning. They were, you think that a Bayern Munich team can't get much better, but under Guardiola.
You said it was a good game. It was a good game if you're German.
Exactly.
What it was for the first time you saw Guardiola imprint some of his Barcelona tactics on Bayern, because the Bayern Munich that conquered all before them last season were an excellent team, but they made use of wide players. Mm. They were rather direct. This time you saw the triangular passing, the triangular passes between all the players.
And the pressing
and
as well.
The pressing was amazing. Philipp Lahm in central midfield doing a defensive midfielder's job was excellent.
Fantastic.
Yaya Toure did not get a kick of the ball. And I love Yaya Toure. Mm. Yaya Toure couldn't get a kick of the ball against Schweinsteiger, Cruz and Philipp Lahm. And then they'd push it out wide, and of course they were aided by Hart's error and of course Gael Clichy's absurd defending for the second goal. But it was an amazing performance by a top-class European team.
Yeah, but I was disappointed with Pellegrini, because I thought it was pretty obvious after about 5 minutes that City were being overwhelmed in midfield. And he didn't react. No, he didn't react until the game was lost, about the 79th minute or something. Mm-hmm. And although City did rally a bit, I think it was mainly because Bayern had taken the foot off the gas, already made substitutions. Mm. So a bit worrying for City. Well, in every department, you can say that there were weaknesses. Goal, we've discussed. Fullback, Micah Richards, looked totally out of it.
Yeah.
Central defence, even Kompany wasn't his usual commanding self. Midfield, we've discussed, totally overrun. Well,
He went with a 4-4-2, didn't he? And I thought against someone like Bayern Munich, you're really asking for it.
But they are at home, though.
Still, I think against someone like Bayern, and for me, it was the midfield. They just completely dominated that.
And in modern football, you can play the so-called 4-3-3, which becomes a 4-5-1 when you're faced with such opposition and still have attacking intent. Mm. So that's a bit of naivety. The other thing I'm going to touch on, Bob, is not just Joe Hart, but a lot of people have overlooked the fact that the other player that's lost a lot of form is Nastasic.
Mm-hmm.
Nastasic was one of City's best performers last season. The young defender was, every time he came in, he was solid. And he's been making mistakes at a clip of one a game, as well as Joe Hart.
Yeah, he's been injured, hasn't he? He's come back for the last two or three games. Yeah, not the player he was last season, I agree.
Yeah, and they've signed, you know, Di Michaelis as cover, and he's out for 6 weeks. So central defence, they're looking a bit short.
I think the only highlight was Negredo's
excellent goal.
Superb. Oh,
goal. But it was the goal of the night, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Superb.
Well, no, the other goal, I think the PSG.
Oh, no, you're going
to... Leverkusen winner.
Oh, yeah, goal of the match, I should say. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. The Leverkusen winner in the 93rd minute to give Sammy Hupia's boys the win was a free kick that everyone was lining up for the header.
And just
bashed into the top corner.
Oh, no, I'm thinking the Atletico Madrid free kick.
That was a good free kick as well, yeah.
Right, we'll debate that later.
Bayern Munich are on top of Group D with 6 points, and Manchester City share second place with CSK Moscow on 3 points. Elsewhere in the Champions League, Group B, Ronaldo and Angel Di Maria score a brace as Real demolish Copenhagen 4-0. Juventus were held to a 2-2 draw against Galatasaray in Turin.
Hmm.
Group C, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, he scored a brace as a PSG defeated Benfica 3-0 in Paris. He actually came out and told Rooney to come and join.
he also said, but Rooney has to learn he won't score goals like Zlatan. So, I mean, take whatever Zlatan says with a pinch of salt.
In the other Group C game, Olympiacos were shocked 3-0 winners at Anderlecht. Group G, Atletico Madrid won 2-1 at Porto to make it 2 wins out of 2. AC Milan needed a 94th minute penalty by Mario Balotelli against Ajax, and that wasn't really a penalty.
No. That was like Elche, one Pepe.
Real Madrid.
He was copying that.
And he's done that before, Balotelli.
Yeah.
It's horrible to see, actually.
And Frank de Boer was just, you know, he was infuriated. Yeah, incandescent rage at the final whistle because, you know, they played well. They got the goal in the 90th minute. They thought, okay, here's 3 points, and it was stolen from them.
Mm. And Balotelli's reaction as well when he took the penalty, he really does set himself up. Anyway.
Mm. In the Europa League, Swansea City made it 2 wins out of 2 in the Group A game after Routledge's second half goal secured a 1-0 home success over St. Gallen. They could have been 2-0 down inside the opening 20 minutes, but then Swansea's German goalkeeper, he saved Kranovic's poor penalty, and then he handled the cross, and Matthias, he rolled the shot, and Swansea found their tempo after that, and they made a breakthrough to Routledge.
Yeah,
that was a hard game for Swansea.
It was, you know, Michu was injured and bleeding all over the place, had to change his shirt 3 times, but they stuck to it. They named a pretty strong side, reserve goalkeeper, couple of reserve fullbacks and midfield, but they named a pretty strong side. It's good to see a team from the Premier League going all out. You know, they beat in Valencia away, which was a great result for them, and they needed to win this game, and they just about did it, as you said, to save a penalty tremor, and they just about did it.
Mm. Well, the game basically ended St. Gallen's 12th match unbeaten run. And yep, so Swansea are 6 points. St. Gallen and share 3 points with Valencia and also Kuban Krasnodar. In Group D of the Europa League, Wigan celebrated their first win in the European competition over Slovenian champions Maribor. Nick Powell, he scored twice, and Ben Watson got it getting in the score sheet as well.
There you go.
All the United
bring
players,
him back. No, bring him back.
All of them do so well when they go away from Old Trafford.
Sure, there's a song
Pogba.
In there.
Jesse Lingard scored scored four goals for Birmingham that day. Oh my!
Yeah, even Ravel Morrison likely to get an England call.
The bad boy
under 21 level anyway.
Well, I'll tell you what, if Rooney wants to go somewhere, I'm sure there are a lot of people that'll take him on loan.
Loan him out.
Ruben Kazan are on 6 points. Wigan are on 4 points. In Group K, Jermaine Defoe and Chadli, they scored for Spurs in a convincing 2-0 away win in Russia against Anzi Machkala. Defoe scored the opening goal in the 34th minute, and Chadli doubled that just after 5 minutes. Spurs then basically held on to game. Never looked like conceding a goal as well.
Yeah, that's 7 goals for Defoe in four starts.
He should start.
And right. Soldado hasn't scored
from
since August the 24th.
From open play as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then AVB does his usual after the post match. Defoe did really well.
Yeah,
and
but he's not playing.
So that was going to play this weekend. Yeah. So, you know, tough one, Jermaine.
In the other Group K games, so Tromso, they were held to a 1-1 draw by 10-man FC Sheriff. Spurs are on 6 points, FC Sheriff are on 2 points. In some other games, Sevilla, they beat Freiburg 2-0. Lazio drew 3-3 with Trabzonspor. Lyon drew 1-1 with Vitoria FC, and PSV, they beat Chornomo Retso Odessa 2-0. That's a mouthful there. Malaysia Cup second leg semi-finals draw actually just came out. Pahang FA and PKNS FC will face against Sime Darby FC and Sarawak FA. Lions 11 or ATM FA, they will face against Johor Taro JDT or also Kelantan. Tonight, actually, in 8:45, ATM will take on Lions 12. PKNS will take on Pahang. ATM actually have a one. Lions actually have a 1-0 aggregate win.
Yeah.
That should be a really, really good game.
Yeah, Lions struggled through the group stage. You know, they did go to the last game to get qualification, and they won 1-0 to get through. But at home to ATM, they looked quite dominant. ATM had a couple of chances. They'll be looking to try and turn it around, but I think it'll be a big ask for them.
Mm. Sarawak, tomorrow, Sarawak and Sime Darby, they have a 0-0 first leg score. In the other game, Kelantan 2 and JDT 4, that's the score, and that should be a cracking game as well. Kelantan is playing at home. And we'll be coming back with updates on the EPL. We're going to end with Jose Mourinho talking about Chelsea.
Basel lost. They have the same points as us. Of course, Schalke now is in advantage. We have a double fixture against them. We go to Basel. We finished the competition playing at home with Steaua. I think we are going to do it. I think we are going to qualify. This result today is important because if you don't win, you are a bit under pressure. But with this result, I think confidence comes. And in this moment, we have just to control the situation, make some points against Schalke.
Hi, I'm Ian Rush. My favourite things about Malaysia are the weather, the passion of football, Liverpool supporters here, and thank Friday's football.
That was Ian Rush. I'm with Bob Holmes, Ray Jennings, and Prabin Paraba. Remember, you could tweet us at BFM Radio. You could SMS 0162019000 or like us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/football on BFM. Moving along to the EPL games this week, starting off with West Brom face Arsenal. West Brom have won two successive matches in the BPL, but Arsenal are the form team. Surely they should win this. Easy game, though?
On paper, I think it looks easy. West Brom, if they are as industrious as they were last weekend, and I think it's who did they beat? Was it Norwich or Villa? I can't remember.
one of those small teams.
Sunderland. So prior to those two games, I didn't think West Brom were playing particularly well. And Steve Clarke, there was a lot of gambling on whether
you were joking about last weekend because they beat another small team last weekend as well.
Well, are they playing Liverpool?
Very small.
I'm gonna say my shout out right now. I think West Brom are going to get a point at least off Arsenal. Okay. Now West Brom have retooled tool, their strike force. It's no coincidence that the last two performances have come when they brought in these three new players to play up front.
Yeah, fair point.
You know, they've got Anichibi, they've got Sessegnon, and Berahino came on for the injured Sinclair. And the three of them looked industrious. They looked like they could all connect with each other against United. And against an Arsenal defence that is not the greatest, it might be an interesting game.
Well, Arsenal have Aaron Ramsey. He's got 4 goals in 3 games.
Yes, yeah. The law of statistical probability says.
I think what's also interesting about Ramsey is he assists, he tackles, his engine. He's got good stamina, and of course he's getting the goals. Yes. It's actually quite refreshing. Yeah. He's only what, 22, is he?
Yes, he is. Yeah. But he's certainly not going to get a goal or an assist this weekend because I've put him in my fantasy football squad. So every time I do that, that's just, you know, Robin Van Persie, put him in last season. He went like 15 games without a goal.
Yeah, Ramsey is a real bonus. I mean, it's a great story. Good, you know, good on the lad. Because after 2 years, it didn't look as if he was going to be the same player, did it? I think even Arsene Wenger had more or less given up on him. And he was never a great goal scorer. I mean, he was a good all-round midfielder. But this scoring spree he's enjoying at the moment is the first one he's had in his career. And he looks a tremendous player, and you can now see why there was such a fuss about him, why Arsenal paid $5 million for him when he was only a teenager. United were after him as well. He was, in fact, a United supporter, but he went to Arsenal on the recommendation of the Cardiff youth team coach, who was an ex-Arsenal man, Terry Burton. So he seems to have made the right decision there. And, yeah, what a player. To have a guy like that... as a goal, scoring, he's just about the leading scorer, I think, in the league.
Yeah,
I mean, this can't continue. Well, you don't think so. But what a bonus.
You think now.
I mean, it's as big a bonus as having Ozil, in my opinion.
And I can't overstate what Ray said earlier. Sometimes when players have very serious injuries, it takes a long time to get back. Yeah. Not just the physical side of it, the mental side of it, to be able to, as Ray said, go in for challenges, you know, really be 100% committed. You can see, for example, after the severe head injury that Petacek sustained when Nicky Hunt challenged him at Reading, he's not been the same goalkeeper. When they're one-on-ones, he doesn't throw himself out. The bravery element that Petacek had for all that time is not there, and it's understandable. Someone who's suffered a serious injury, there are psychological
impacts. Since I dislocated my shoulder, I don't swim.
Yes, that's exactly the same.
Right. Tumbleweed.
In the other game, Liverpool in second place played Crystal Palace, second from bottom. Daniel Sturridge has either scored or assisted 15 goals in his last 11 BPL appearance for Liverpool. Crystal Palace, though, they have gone on 270 minutes without a BPL goal. This is a bogey game, though.
I think Liverpool. I mean, Suarez is back, home crowd behind him. I think Liverpool will boss this quite easily. I think a telling stat for Crystal Palace is second bottom at the moment, but they're also having to make the most number of tackles of all the teams in the Premier League, and it just shows you they're not holding the ball, that they're a counter-attacking team, and really they're getting into a lot of trouble regularly. And I think Palace, really, they're going back to the Championship.
Oh yeah, I think Derby's all-time low points record for the Premiership is in danger.
I don't think it's that bad. Come on.
Brendan Rodgers has a choice to make here, though. The one thing I will say is Lucas Leiva is suspended after collecting five yellow cards. Now, if Brendan Rodgers is going to be positive, bearing in mind they're playing a weak team, then he brings in an extra attacker and puts either Sterling or Iago Aspas in. Now, if he's going to be negative, which I think he will be, he's going to bring Jordan Henderson to midfield, keep his three centre-backs, bring in Egger and move Kolo Touré onto right wing-back. So Rodgers will set the tone, because as Ray said, with Sturridge and Suarez up front, you always think you probably can win a game, but to really boss this game, you have to be on the attack from the word go, because you know Crystal Palace are a side that you can put to the sword. And I think if they're negative, they will suffer, though.
Well, the Reds have kept 8 clean sheets in their last 13 Premier League games. Crystal Palace are the only side to yet to attempt a single through ball in the PPL this season.
Says it all.
Says it all. Manchester City in 7th place play Everton, who are in 4th. Man City have won just 2 of their last BPL meetings with Everton, losing 9. Yeah. Everton have won 17 BPL meetings with City, and only against West Ham they have won more often, which is 19 games.
Yeah, but Everton had David Moyes then, you see.
But they're unbeaten this season.
But it's interesting, isn't it?
You realise the Manchester Derby United had David Moyes, right? I mean, just you know.
It's interesting how Everton traditionally start slowly, And yet this season, it's been the opposite.
And flying.
And Manchester United have started. I'll just leave that thought hanging there.
They've started. We'll full stop. You know, Manchester United have started.
There's a link.
I will say one thing. Roberto Martinez has changed the way Everton play slightly. They're a lot more fluid coming out. They try to play the ball out of defence. And I think that actually will make them a bit more susceptible to City. I think City has struggled with David Moyes' teams because they were always very compact. Mm-hmm. They always had the two banks of four, and they defended well, and they got a goal from a set piece or on the break, Leighton Baines' free kick. And this Everton team tries to play. And I think if they try to play too much at the Etihad, there'll be a City team that's been very hurt by what happened with when Bayern came a-calling, and they're going to go out and try and put them to the sod.
I think they do have concentration problems, City, though. I mean, we talked about Joe Hart, but they've lost a number... They've lost or drawn a number of games from winning positions, and that just shows that team, they tend to lose their focus as the game progresses. And Everton, I think, will be up for this. Yeah. I think they're still unbeaten. It's a real test for them. I think it's their first big game of the season. Yeah. I could see maybe a draw here.
Bob?
Yeah, I think so. I think we'll find out quite a bit about City, the way they react to the Bayern defeat, because it was the kind of defeat that can actually put a club off for just about a season. I mean, it was monumental. If anybody didn't see it, you should try to catch the replay, because it was one of those games.
And it was sustained. It wasn't
absolute masterclass, wasn't it? And I mean, when you get people like the players, Micah Richards, for example, saying we were boys against men. Mm. Aguero said that Bayern were the best team he'd ever played against.
Mm-hmm. And wasn't Robin saying he expected a bit more?
Yeah, he said it was more of a fight. Surprisingly easy.
Yeah, that was
I mean,
it.
When you get the players reacting like that to a game, I mean, that tells you an awful lot.
Mm. And this is their second loss on the trot, isn't it? I mean, they didn't play badly against Villa last week, but it's still a defeat.
Yeah.
So they've got to pick themselves up against a good team.
Yeah, so much for my forecast that City would walk away with the title.
Well, Everton have Romelu Lukaku. He's now scored 6 goals in his last 5 EPL games, despite only playing 220 minutes overall in these matches. That's a goal every 37 minutes on average.
It's impressive, isn't it?
Just one thing about Lukaku, though, is that people ask, why doesn't Jose Mourinho give him a chance and let him play at Chelsea? I just want to point out that it's actually two very different styles of playing. When he played at West Brom and when he played at Everton, Lukaku was the focal target man, which means every part of the offense went through him. And obviously, being a big center forward, he thrived on that. Okay, he put in players, he was at the end of finishing. When you play at Chelsea, it's a different game altogether, because they want the ball to come through midfield, through their ball-playing midfielders. And so you as a striker now, you have to forge out chances, you have to poach, you have to be a really good striker. There are very few strikers that can do both those roles. You know, your Ronaldos, your Messis, maybe your Suarez. But the majority have to adjust one way or the other. So that's why Lukaku, when given chances in the Chelsea side, struggled, in my opinion, because he wasn't used to that system where the ball came through the ball playing midfielders. He didn't know the right
runs. That's why Moses struggled as well.
Yes.
Because when you look, he was a classic sort of front man.
Yeah.
And they don't play that way.
Yeah, there's another tale of a manager getting rid of players that are not his own. Mm. I mean, Mourinho obviously didn't sign either Moses or Lukaku. Yeah. Mm. And you always see that. I mean, look at Moyes with Zaha and Kagawa. Mm. You know, they're not his players, are they? And
but then he's only got one player there, isn't he?
Sunderland, bottom of the table, play against Manchester United, who are, let me see, where are they on the table? There we go. Oh, they're 12th, sorry.
You've got to get used to looking Ross, further down.
Ross, all's forgiven. Come back.
Sunderland have just won just eight points from a possible 72 in their previous 24 matches versus Manchester United in the BPL. But that was the same case with the West Brom when they were playing.
You realize Ross is only coming back if they win this weekend, right? I mean, if they lose, it's going to extend.
There is a pattern developing here, isn't there? Any other week, I'd say, you know, United win. Having said that, Sunderland are pretty dire. I think they've won at home in the last 12.
Yep.
I think Fletcher's still out. Barini's back. Okay, that gives them a bit of hope up front, and they're not scoring very readily. But it could be one of those games where United feel they're away from home, pressure's off. You know, they've played relatively well in Europe away games. The away game during the week. Maybe it might work that way. I still think there are fundamental problems in the dressing room between the stalwarts and Moyes, and I can't see that being alleviated anytime soon.
Well, Sunderland have lost 4 consecutive Premier League games, but the last time they lost 5 on the bounce was in March 2006.
The one silver lining Sunderland fans may take from this is that you could see last week against Liverpool, and mind you, Liverpool got a 3-1 win, but they were dire in midfield. Yep. You could see that the introduction of Lee Cattermole actually gave them a bit of a lift, and he kept urging everyone on. You know, he wasn't the captain, or Shea was, but Cattermole made a big difference. You can see that the restoration of Sebastian Larsson to the team actually added a little bit of creativity, and they were moving. They've got one or two good players, maybe someone like Jaccarini, you know, Altidore, if he's firing on all cylinders. Having said that, I think United are going to get 3 points from this particular visit, but I think a lot of what United do will depend on whether Wayne Rooney's fit. You can see that without Wayne Rooney there to pull the strings for them, let's go back to the stat again. They've scored no goals from open play since the first day of the season. Every goal has been either a free kick or a penalty, and so that's something they've got to set right. Now, I made this point earlier. United are used to getting lots of things from their white men, and at the moment, their white men, be it Valencia, be it Young, be it Nani, are just not producing at the moment. So that's a worry for David Moyes.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. Certainly, I think Rooney's presence will affect things. I was going to say, if Rooney plays, I take United to win. I think it's as simple as that. He's the only guy that's doing it for them this season. Mm. And it is surprising. I mean, if you think that there's something wrong in the dressing room, if you think that the players, the senior players, are not really responding to David Moyes, it's ironic that Rooney is. And he's playing as well as he has for about 3 years.
Yeah, but I think he's in the shop window come January. I think he's seen what's going on.
The reason why he's playing well.
Yeah, I think he's promoting himself.
Oh. Well, that's a bit of a sad indictment on him for the last 2 years, though, isn't it?
I think he's seen the signs from early on that things aren't good at United. You know, when you look at the scenario, it's a bit like you bring in a supervisor to run a multinational company. You know, could you see David Moyes getting the managerial seat at Man City, at Chelsea, Arsenal?
I've made the point. Without Ferguson's backing.
And we know why he's backed him. There's a number of reasons. Obviously, his background, his work ethic, all that. But also, more importantly, he will save money.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that.
No, I think there's a fundamental issue here of United not wanting, the Glazers not wanting to splash the cash. It's quite simple. That whole thing about Bale and the bid, 105, 110 million, I think that's rubbish. I don't think it was a serious bid at all, but they were making the noises so that it would appease the fans.
Well, I think you're being a bit harsh on David Moyes. I mean, it's all right to say he wouldn't get the job at Chelsea or Man City or wherever, but who would you go for, assuming that Pep Guardiola and Mourinho were not available? Who would you have chosen?
You could have tried to lure Carlo Ancelotti.
I was just about to say Ancelotti would have been a good choice.
I think I'd rather have David Moyes.
You could try to get Marcelo Lippi. You could get anyone with Champions League experience. Now, I don't think David Moyes is the wrong choice for United. I think given time he may do something, but I can say this: if Alex Ferguson has not backed David Moyes, a manager who's never managed a Champions League game, well, qualifier against Villarreal, who's never had a big transfer fund to utilize, who's never managed Super Eagles goes at this level, I don't think he gets a job at any other club in the world.
We're in an environment, modern culture, as far as football goes, it's very flippant.
Yeah.
And it can change overnight. And United fans are still behind Moyes. That could easily change within, you know, if United are mid-table come December, when we're talking about being patient, we're not talking about 2 or 3 months. We're saying a couple of seasons for Moyes to really do a good job.
Yeah, but I think you are underestimating Alex Ferguson here. I mean, if the greatest manager of the modern era is giving a resounding yes to someone, I think you've got to respect that opinion.
But
and he gave a resounding yes to David Moyes. He was his choice. And I think you've got to give him time.
Bob,
I mean, he's only had a few games.
The greatest manager of his generation, fantastic when signing players, very poor when signing assistant managers. Carlos Queiroz, Brian Kidd, Steve McLaren, not one of his assistant managers have made it successfully
as a manager. They were good assistants.
They were good assistants.
Which brilliant are the people assistants. He picked. So he's picking Moyes based on that criteria, Bob.
Are you suggesting he's going to come back?
Well, no. He's made it, made it very clear.
He will come back as an assistant.
As an assistant manager.
Now, I think for Manchester United,
United, the basic minimum this season is fourth place. If United get third or fourth, they're going to say, fine, give Moyes time, let him build a team. If United finish fifth or sixth, it's going to be interesting to see what happens at the end of the season.
I think the key is if the season ticket holders, because that is where the money's coming from. And that's why I think Arsenal bought Ozil. It was very much a case of people not renewing their season tickets. Once you start seeing empty seats at Old Trafford, it's, you know, that impact of domino effect.
We have seen them already.
There you go.
Ross, hope you're listening. Other ties. Spurs are on third place. They play against West Ham. Spurs have won 15 and lost just 2 in their last 25 London derbies at home. This should be a Spurs win.
Yeah, West Ham, terrible up front. They're, I think, fourth bottom at the moment. They're not a bad squad. They're just not getting it together. Gelling.
I'm just going to say, not a bad squad, but they don't have a single striker aside from Andy Carroll.
Yeah.
Okay, Modibo Maiga has not scored a Premier League goal. You're playing Morrison
Petric,
up front. And they went
played a couple of games, not been impressed.
Andy Carroll being all the eggs in the Carroll basket and hasn't turned out because he's injured.
And Spurs are just too strong. I think they've got they look great this
Easy.
Season.
Norwich on 14th place. They play against Chelsea, and Norwich have only conceded 23 goals in 22 home league games under Chris Hughton, keeping 9 clean sheets in the run. This is going to be a very tough game for Chelsea away.
Yeah. I think we can assume that Mata is going to play in this game, can't we?
Hopefully. Or Kevin De Bruyne.
this could be a boring 0-0 draw. Because we know what Mourinho's like. We know what Chris Hughton's like.
Yeah.
Cardiff City, they play against Newcastle, and Hull will play against Aston Villa. The other two games are Fulham against Stoke and Southampton against Swansea. We're going to take a short break, and taking us to the break is David Moyes. He's talking about how he's happy with a point in the Champions League game.
Good point in the Champions League coming here. They've got a great record against English team Shakhtar, so team stood up well to it tonight. We got a good goal early doors, and I thought we looked as if we were going to stop them from scoring tonight. We defended very well.
Hi, I'm Didi Haman. Think Friday's football.
It's the Tank Friday, it's football. I'm here with Bob Holmes, Ray Jennings and Pravin Paraba. We're moving along to the championship. Steve McLaren was unveiled as a Nigel Clough successor at Derby on Tuesday morning. That was a surprise.
I just thought the decision to sack Clough was quite disgraceful, actually. I thought he was doing an okay job there. Money was very, very tight. Season upon season, he was told he had less of a budget. He had to trim the wages bill. I didn't think he was doing too badly results-wise. Obviously, there was one or two recently that weren't great. But I think... how long was he there, Bob? 4 years?
4 years.
4 years.
Longest-serving manager.
I thought it was the wrong decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Outrageous decision. And then to appoint McLaren... Well, one of the great assistants.
Yes.
Bob, a brilliant number two, but a pretty lousy number one.
It was really surprising. It was the loss to your club, Forest, that actually made the axe fall on.
Well, just before in midweek, they'd lost to Leicester.
Yeah.
So that's another.
Yeah, but Leicester, the form team, one of the form teams of the division.
Yeah, but they
had 11 points at the point when he was sacked, which was the same number of points someone like Leeds United had, and Brian McDermott's secure in his job. So a surprising decision to let go of Nigel Clough.
Derby County will play against Leeds United on Saturday. Just going on to the Facebook, there's a comment by Sami Azam Ali. He's asking, any thoughts on why Moyes is not giving Zaha a chance since they signed him for $15 million, and Ashley Young isn't doing so much, so why change?
It's not the spurious rumour that he was caught in bed with Moyes' daughter. That's going to tell you that right now.
Just in case you were thinking.
Young, 22 attempted crosses in 4 games, managed to find one teammate. I don't get it with Young. I mean, fair enough, he didn't play him last time out. But Zaha, I thought he impressed in the Community Shield. but I don't know why he's not playing him. Yeah. Maybe he's not fitting into the system that he wants. Maybe he wants to blood him a little bit more. He's only young.
He impressed in pre-season as well.
Yeah.
And the thing I can't get is not playing him in games. Sometimes you don't want to throw a youngster in at the deep end. Fine, although he's doing that with Januzaj, so you have to question that.
Yeah.
But he doesn't even name Zaha on the bench most days. So that's a really surprising stat, right?
Well, maybe there is some truth in the rumour.
Bob's been on Twitter.
Just before we go into the Bundesliga and other leagues, let's check in with Andy in the treatment room.
In our fantasy league, we say congratulations to our top five, which consists of our leader, once more, Hasri Hazer. Campeones with 405 points, despite his captain, Negredo, only pulling in four. In second, we have Marco Della Vega's Abang Longkawasan. Third is Legend 18. Joint third, Daryl Dinesh's Wallaway. In fifth, we have Stephen Ching's aptly titled Fantasy Team. Top pundit is again Craig Marias, whose Champions Elect team are on 375 points. Nice one, Craig, again. He captained Ricky Lambert, which proved a wise choice, with 16 points for the Southampton man. As we head into the weekend's matches, here is an injury update from the treatment room. In what promises to be a cracker of a match, City entertain Everton with virtually a full-strength squad. Only Demichelis and Rodwell are out for them. Everton will welcome back Morales and Gibson, though Pienaar and Alcaraz miss out. At the Stadium of Light, Sunderland have question marks over the fitness of Brown, De Senna and Bardsley, with Stephen Fletcher's return date the 2nd of November following that dislocated shoulder. United, meanwhile, may be without Rio Ferdinand, Rooney should be okay, and Darren Fletcher edges closer to a return. West Brom take on Arsenal at the Hawthorns, missing Sinclair and Guerra, and there'll be a late fitness test for a host of players, including Sessegnon, Anichebe, Morrison, Long, Anelka and Brunt. Vidra, Foster and Thorne have no chance of being back in time. Arsenal are likely to play Carl Jenkinson in place of Sanya, and the match will probably be too soon for the likes of Cazorla, Sanogo, Podolski and Diaby. Liverpool's absentees include Coutinho, Sissoko, Allen and Quartez. They'll take on Palace, who are still missing a cluster of players, including Delaney, Williams-Hunt and Price, though McCarthy and Bolasie should return to the side. Spurs' absentees include Kabul and Kapue, but Aaron Lennon could be back for them. Their opponents West Ham, who have been struggling for goals, are still minus Andy Carroll. Alou Diarra is out, but Joe Cole could well be in contention. Cardiff will welcome Newcastle with a full roster, while the Magpies look strong with only the two Taylors unavailable. That's it for this round. Have a good week and stay healthy.
Have a good weekend to you too, Andy. Moving along to the Bundesliga, Bayern Leverkusen will play against Bayern Munich. That should be a very, very, very good game. And Borussia Mönchengladbach, they will play against a Borussia Dortmund, who are on top of the Bundesliga. Any thoughts on who's going to win the Bundesliga, although it's very early in the season still, though? Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich?
Well, it's a two-horse race, I think, very much as it is in Spain, or we thought it was in Spain until Atletico came along. Yeah. No, you can't see anybody to touch Borussia Dortmund or Bayern. Mm-hmm. But after seeing Bayern in midweek, I think you'd have to say Bayern, unless they get too many games at the moment, or something. Yeah. 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 Borussia Dortmund's best bet might actually be to bow out of the Champions League early. Bayern finding themselves in everything, and perhaps, you know, they just get a few injuries or something.
Having said that, I watch quite a lot of Bundesliga, and Bayern actually have struggled slightly in the Bundesliga. Yeah. You know, people who watch, you know, just Champions League and saw them play City will say, well, they're going to walk away with it. They actually struggled against Nuremberg. They struggled against Eintracht Frankfurt.
And the team
that doesn't struggle in the Bundesliga is Borussia Dortmund. They're set up so well. They play amazing football. I personally think that Borussia Dortmund are going to spoil Pep Guardiola's...
There was a lot of criticism for Guardiola, wasn't there, in the first two, 3 weeks of the Bundesliga by Munich fans, but it seems to be shifting.
And there was criticism from Sammer on the team, you know. Yeah. You know, he's not used to the culture where you come out and lambast your own team, and Matthias Sammer did that, and he was set down by Uli Hoeneß and then Karl-Heinz Rummenigge after that. I think Guardiola will take time to come to terms with it. But you can see from the performance against City that that's an awesome team.
Yeah, I think you're going to see that Guardiola really is a great coach. Yeah. It's not just a one-club coach.
It's interesting, because he's gone into a very good club. And the Barcelona team he took over was a very good club. So be interesting to see him going into Palace.
or United.
See what he can do.
Or Sunderland.
Or United.
Hey, we're not talking relegation yet. Okay.
Well, I think the good news, there's good and bad news. I think he does definitely want to manage in England. And I think when he's had a couple of years in Germany,
will be just about time for Moyes to come off.
But the bad news for you, the bad news for you guys is that I think you prefer London.
Oh,
I think
it's a bit of a culture vulture.
The bad news is we won't have any money.
But credit has to be given to Jurgen Klopp as well, because he's lost their star midfielder.
One of the most underrated coaches in Europe. Again, I think now his stock has gone up. But really, I mean, he lost Kagawa, he lost Godze. He loses a star player every season, yet he brings in players that fit into the system. This year, it's Mkhitaryan and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. And they do supremely well. You know, big ups to Jurgen Klopp. He's another fantastic coach.
In Ligue 1, AS Monaco, they are on top of the table. They play against Saint-Étienne. Olympic Marseille, they will play against PSG. And Serie A, Juventus will play against AC Milan. That should be a very good game. Juventus are on third and AC Milan ninth in the league.
Well, actually, I think, you know, the marquee game of this weekend isn't Juventus AC Milan. It's Inter Milan against unbeaten Roma. Mm. And that tells you a lot about AC Milan's start to the season. AC Milan seem to go through this peaks and valleys where they have money to splash and suddenly they have no money and they've lost Kevin Prince Boateng. They look a very average squad this year, to be perfectly
honest. Just looking at Serie A last weekend, actually, I was astonished at the crowds.
Mm. Yeah.
They were so small.
Yes,
they were. It's been like that for a while.
The top sides are all averaging about 20 to 25,000 fans per game. And then you compare that with the Bundesliga, where, for example, Borussia Mönchengladbach draw 40,000 fans and Dortmund draw 90,000 fans.
But so it's all subsidised in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
But like away fans get free train travel and whatever.
Well, the championship is pretty close to Serie A
in terms of attendance. Yeah.
In La Liga, Barcelona will play against Real Valladolid. And also Atletico Madrid, they will play against Celta de Vigo. Athletic Club will play against Valencia. Barcelona, on top of the table, they will play against Real Valladolid.
Yeah.
Messi's out as well, right, if I'm not mistaken?
7 out of 7. Messi is out, but and they did struggle, actually, without Messi. In the second half of the game against Almeria, it was difficult. And against Celtic as well.
They didn't
create as much as they did when they lost 2-1.
Yeah.
So they do struggle a little bit without Messi. I think that's why they brought Neymar in, so they don't become a permanent one-man team, but they definitely missed the presence of the best player in the world.
Neymar still hasn't hit it, has he?
Yeah.
I mean, it's early days. Yeah. He's fascinating to watch.
Well, Bale hasn't hit it yet as well.
Well, that's because he hasn't played. But
I hate to say it, but Bale is looking more and more like a Jonathan Woodgate.
Come on. Bob, no.
He's got better hair than me.
Well, he hasn't scored an own goal and got sent off in his debut anyway.
There's an interesting comment from Chris Coleman, the Welsh manager today. He said that Real Madrid rushed Bale back and that he actually was injured. Interesting, because Chris Coleman called him to the Wales
squad and
played him. But still, there might be some truth to that. He's injured again now. He's probably going to miss the game at the weekend. And he may not have recovered fully, so probably can hold off on Bale's value.
Yeah,
until
he didn't have a pre-season, did he?
Yeah.
Because he was hanging about waiting for the transfer to go through and wasn't going to training.
The whole way that was done was very messy. It's just set itself up to be a bit of a flop. Yeah. Not long term, but just the initial stages,
All right. That's all the time we have, but we can squeeze in some big shouts. Bob, what is your big shout for the weekend?
Well, if you call it big, Cardiff to beat Newcastle.
Really small.
All right, small shout. Whisper. Okay.
For fantasy football fans, get a lot of Swansea players in your squad this weekend.
Wow. That's your big shout.
Yeah.
Okay, mine is either Martin Yol or Alan Pardew to get fired.
Not United to win at Sunderland.
Ross will be back on Monday. Say thank you to Bob Holmes.
Thank you and good night.
Robin Paraba.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
And Ray Jennings.
Have a lovely weekend.
And have a lovely weekend to all of you. This is Tank Friday. It's football on BFM 89.9.
Tank Friday. It's football every Friday at 8 p.m. on BFM 89.9. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.